Privet, everyone. On today's episode is a very good friend of mine and my great colleague who helps others who come to this country build their successful life through their language skills. Please welcome Maya.
Conversation about Chernobyl. Did you live next to it or not far from Chernobyl? From you came from Ukraine to the United States, right?
Yeah. Okay. So when it happened in 1986, I was living not in Chernobyl, and I never lived there. My family and I we lived in Kiev, in the capital of Ukraine. Chernobyl was like a little over 100 kilometers from Kiev. But my parents lived only 30 kilometers from Chernobyl. So when it happened in 1986, nobody knew what happened and if actually anything happened. So the night, or I should say the morning, because it happened at 1 o'clock a.m. on April 26, 1986. My cousin from America called me, and he asked me what happened there. I said, "Where?" He said, "In Chernobyl." And I said, "Nothing happened. Everything is fine." And we did not know until a few days later.
Oh, wow. So America, before you did?
Before we did, 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
My cousin came out the same night, the same morning.
Wow.
When the explosion happened. So, I didn't know anything. I told my sister next day. I said something happened, but nobody told us anything. So this was it. But then, since, like I said, my parents used to live very close, 30 kilometers is just, I would say, 30 minutes car ride. Buses with people from Chernobyl and Pripyat, which was a city built specifically for those workers who used to take care of the station, mm-hmm. of that station. Right. Buses of people started coming to the town where my parents lived. Because without even explaining a lot, they probably in a few days they announced on the radio, on TV, that there was a fire. But nobody told us how dangerous it was. It all was.
Right.
Nobody explained. So, but they did start the evacuation of the population from Chernobyl. Probably, it was not probably next day.
Mm-hmm.
Next day. Unfortunately, the wind that next day was blowing to, I would say, to the north. And it happened so that the town where my parents lived got much more radioactive dust, I should say.
Right.
Then Chernobyl itself.
Wow.
Cloud buses and cars that were bringing people brought it on their tires.
That's right.
So it was horrible. My mom used to say she lived through the Second World War. She called this Chernobyl, she called this is another war. So days later, the military people, the army, the soldiers, started coming over to the town where my parents lived, and they started washing, how they say, washing houses, roofs, because all this dust set up on the roofs, on the houses, the walls of the houses, and of course everything went into the soil. So of course people who lived in the suburbs, they had their vegetable gardens, and it was forbidden for them. It was a source of food for them.
That's right, because that's what people grow in Russia and in Ukraine a lot. They grow vegetables and fruit.
Right, and it was in the 80s. So basically, there was no food because everything they grew, they could not eat. And next year, they were not allowed. It was not allowed to do it, but not everybody listened to it. And a lot of people continued working on in their gardens and growing vegetables and fruit and everything else. And of course, it was not good to eat it because everything was dangerous to eat. Because the soil, of course, it was affected.
Right. Did people get sick because of that?
You know, it does not happen overnight, the sickness. It doesn't happen. But with time, maybe in a year or so, yes. And then, when it, of course, it was not no secret anymore. So they started, well, before that, my sister and I, we both lived in the capital of Ukraine. We usually visited our parents once in a while. So we started coming more often and bringing food for them. You know, something that we could bring from the capital.
Did you drive there, or how did you get to your parents?
It was a bus connection.
Okay.
We didn't have cars. So it was a bus connection. So
they didn't close the access for visitors, so anybody could come and...
Okay. At that time, yes. At that time, right after it happened, and fewer years after that, until, nobody probably thought about the people, because the main concern was to cover that reactor where the explosion was. So everybody, I'm not talking about the government stuff, because of course I was not involved with that, sure. But what I knew that everybody was, even in Kyiv, it was very close. So I remember when I went to, you know, since it happened in April, in May, June, when summer came, everybody wanted, it's not like here in this country, you can get anything you want any time of the year, any season. Over there, it was all seasonal. And of course, in the spring, you wanted something fresh.
Sure.
The greens, veggies, you know, berries. But I was afraid they would come to the farmer's market. I looked at everything, it looked very appealing, everything. Well, they had, of course, they had a special inspection point where everybody, every farmer, would come with the produce and had to go through a check. I'm not sure how to call this. Tool, dosimeter,
maybe English. Something maybe. Measure the radiation.
The radiation, the level of radiation. So, to a certain, well, I don't know how precise those tools were, and what kind of food we actually ate there. Nobody knows.
Right. And I
don't even want to think about it. But it was, you looked at everything and it was so appealing that I was afraid to buy it. And then the prices went up so high.
Absolutely.
You know, this Ukrainian cook, we call it borscht. So I remember it cost me like hundreds of those money to buy all the stuff that I needed to make this soup at the farmer's market. everything was very expensive then.
Could you actually trust the farmers market? Did you have the feeling that you could get fresh produce or safe produce there, or it was still questionable?
At the stores, you mean?
At the farmers market.
Like I said, well, it all went through a checkup, you know, it was checked.
Right.
But I don't know if I could trust them, you know?
Okay.
Because people wanted to sell it. So if it was too high trouble, they were not allowed to sell it. Who knows? I don't know. But those were horrible times.
Yeah.
Horrible.
Yeah. Was it the same in stores? Did they check the produce in stores?
They were supposed to, but who knows how it was.
Right.
You know, and now that they look back, I have no trust in all of that because from the very beginning, the government was not honest with the people. You know, they tried not to tell the people the whole truth. Later, my daughter was like 10 years old, and everybody who had kids tried to get somewhere else where as far as possible from this place, from Ukraine, somewhere to the east of Ukraine, to Russia, to anywhere where people could escape, but we had nowhere to go, So I remember after May 1st, they started saying on the radio, on the news, on TV, do not let your children play outside. If they go outside, they need to wear some hat or they need to cover their hair. When they come home, take a shower, wash the hair. Do not open the windows just to avoid the dust. Radioactive dust, and it was Kiev, it was not Chernobyl. Going back to my parents' place, my father got sick, he got cancer, and in 3 years we lost him in 1989.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes.
Do you connect with this radiation exposure? That's why he got sick?
He did not have a direct, you know what, but the people lived in this atmosphere, you know, with the high level of radiation.
Right, because people didn't want to leave homes. They had nobody to go to or nowhere to go to.
Except to us in Kiev, but it was basically the same. My husband still worked at that time, and he could not. I think my mom worked then too, yes. So they had their job. So they could not just leave. So, again, in a couple of years, I don't know exactly, 4 or 5, I don't know. Finally, the government decided that this little town, not a capital. So the government decided that they will evacuate everybody, all the population from there.
After 5 years?
I don't remember exactly how long it took them, but not 3 years, but more. So they started, let me tell you, after my father was gone in 1989, took our mom from there, and she lived with us at my sister's at my place. And she never returned back there. But with the town, what happened? They, like I said, they wanted to evacuate all the people with time. So the population now is spread all around Ukraine. So at some, I cannot say, this didn't happen. It did happen. They built some new apartments for the people, or they found places for them around Ukraine. And what happened to this town It does not exist anymore. Even on a map, not even on a map of Ukraine.
Are you serious?
I am.
Wow.
Nobody lives there.
So
nobody.
They demolished all the houses there and they just...
No, they did not demolish everything. Just the people who were building their own houses because they were not able to live there, they tried to bring something, like something that was expensive to get, or some part of their houses, probably something that was cost expensive for them in the beginning. So they tried to bring some stuff from the houses when they were leaving the place.
Interesting.
So after that, there was kind of, how they call it, service or something. People would hire fighters. Well, I'm not sure.
You were saying that they relocated people from that location.
Right. They located them all around Ukraine, different regions. Some are in the capital, in Kiev, some in other regions. But nobody lives in the city, which is the original name was Polevskaya.
You really shocked me when you said that this town is not on the map anymore. This is scary. This is how
my dad is buried there in the cemetery, of course, because it happened in 1989. And since we are not anymore in Ukraine, but in this country, we're unable to visit his grave. So one of my relatives, she lives close by to Kiev, and every year since in the town that she lives, you probably heard about Boryspil. Did you hear Annette? That's the international airport of Kiev. Never heard. That's to say that the relative, it's my mom's cousin, every year she and her daughter, they visit the cemetery because there is an organized trip every year in the spring before the religious holidays. There are two cemeteries that people get on a bus and they go all the way to visit, and we appreciate very much that someone visits my father's grave.
That's great. That's I mean, it's big. But is it the only place they kept the cemetery in that town?
In the town?
Yeah.
No, there are, well, there are not so many cemeteries there, but people visit just two of them, the main ones. So the bus goes there. So it does not go through the whole town. It comes to a point at the entrance of the town, okay? And people get out of the bus and then they walk to the cemetery, which is, I would say, like maybe over 3 miles.
So there are people working and taking care of the cemetery in the town?
No, there's nobody who lives there to take care of anything. So people who live in another town in Ukraine, just because they were all relocated from their native town to other places, there is a certain point where the bus picks all the people up and takes them to this town, which does not exist anymore, you know. But the cemeteries do. Nobody lives there. The houses are in an awful condition. No roads. That's terrible. But they still go. So my sister and I, we appreciate it so much.
Absolutely. So those people, they when they come, they take care of the cemetery. only one cemetery.
Not of the whole cemetery, but like, for example, this lady, she is like 90 years old.
Right.
The one that my mom's cousin. And her daughter is like 70 years old, you know, so they cannot do much. But every time they go, they clean, they wash. I would say 14 to 16 graves. They bring water, they bring clothes, pieces of clothes, whatever they can carry in hands, because they walk, like I said, over 3 miles to get to the cemetery. Then they can come back to the point where the bus is supposed to wait for them, get on the bus, and the bus bring them back to where they live now. So this is what it is.
Interesting how that works. It's unbelievable. I read only in the books how new cities started, how they disappeared in the history of Russia, but I have never actually heard from anybody, and it happened during my time, that the place can disappear like this. It doesn't exist anymore. It's just...
It's not exist. There's, like I said, like a group of people that kind of, well, how do I say, security, I would say, and firefighters. Because they don't want anything to happen to, you know, to avoid fires, and because there are a lot of forests. It's a very, it used to be a very nice green piece of land, you know, with rivers, and people would come from other cities of Ukraine, Kyiv, to pick up mushrooms. To fish. It's a very nice. Have you heard of Pripyat? The river? Chernobyl station is built on this river.
Okay. And by the way, what happened to Chernobyl itself? Is it closed as well, or people live there? What's going on there now? Do you know?
Well, I would refer you to the movies. There was a series on TV. On HBO, I think. And I think even on YouTube, if you search, you would find a lot of materials now, because I don't know why, but this year there was a lot said about Chernobyl, something that I never heard about. And of course, I don't know much. I just know about my family and what I experienced myself. So I know that at first there were four generators originally in Chernobyl. So one was the one that exploded, the fourth, and the other three they continued working. So I'm not sure what's happening now. I think the whole station is closed now. But the reaction, you know, the chain reaction, I think under the ground, is still going on. And I remember that the scientists predicted in the beginning, after it happened, that it will continue another 300 years.
Wow.
Because it's a nuclear reaction, you know? It just keeps going on. So this is why the covers, that they didn't know how to cover it, so it doesn't go outside from the ruined generator, so it doesn't get in the air, you know?
Now, I'm really surprised now, because I watched the trailer of a new documentary done by an American guy, and what he did, he started to do the organized trips to Chernobyl, and saying it's absolutely safe right now to be there, but from what you're saying, it's not true.
That's what I'm saying. No, I'm not saying that it's all going outside in the air, in the atmosphere. I just don't know this. But in the beginning, they tried to avoid this happening, So they tried to find a way to cover that generation. What is it, the radioactive material?
Some kind of chemical?
No, it is a chemical element, of course, the one that is radioactive and very dangerous. So it keeps being produced, but the reactor is closed. And I remember that it would give fractures because of the high temperature. You know, so they built another one and another one. This I am not sure, because I think it was after we left Ukraine, but I know it was going on. So originally, in the very beginning, like I told you, that when it happened, the wind brought all of that main danger, the radioactive dust, it went to the north. The town where my parents used to live was on its way. So it was originally worse damaged by this radioactive element than Chernobyl itself.
Wow.
This is why Chernobyl exists as a city. I think some people live there. I'm not sure. We can find it out online. But my city where I was born does not exist anymore.
Isn't that something? On your birth certificate, do you still have the name of the town that doesn't exist?
Yeah, in my birth certificate, of course.
Wow. Yeah. Have you had any questions about it being in the United States and being naturalized? Have they ever asked you questions about this?
No. I came in 93 to the United States. So it was 7 years after.
Okay.
Nobody. Mm-mm. Well, I don't think anybody paid attention to that.
Right. And I think when we become American citizens, they do the background check, but maybe not that deep, or maybe they know that if it was
Chernobyl, it doesn't say Chernobyl. You know, if it was Chernobyl, they would probably, out of curiosity, they would probably ask me something. But this is it.
Right.
Nobody asked anything.
So, if I may ask you this question, is it the reason why you came to the United States because of that catastrophe of what happened in Ukraine, or was it a different reason?
It was one of the main reasons, I would say. It was one of the main reasons, because we had no place to go to live somewhere else. You know, my mom would not live on her own. She lost her husband. And she wanted to be with us. And it was a time when people started moving, thanks to Gorbachev, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People started visiting relatives abroad. People had some freedom. I don't know if you remember, because you were too young then.
I remember. I lived in two different countries, and I remember how it was before Russia, when we lived in the USSR. Everybody had jobs, everybody had paid vacation time, and then all of a sudden, when we became a different country and with freedom, some people didn't know what to do with this freedom.
I know. They still don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a big responsibility. But for you, as a family, when you came to the United States, it was a big shift as well.
No, we had my mom's sister in this country, in America. And after this happened, after this Chernobyl, after my father was gone, my mom lost her sister. she started, she offered us, why don't you think about it? Because before 1987, nobody even thought about immigrating. In 97, when, like I said, thanks to Gorbachev, people started moving and just going abroad just for, at least for a vacation, if not immigrating. So that was a, well, she gave us a suggestion, and time came when we started thinking about it. And it was the 90s, after the Soviet Union fell apart. You know this too. It was really difficult.
It was. It was. I remember the time. Yeah.
I remember well, we did not have money in the bank. You know, like, we did not keep the money in the bank to begin with. There were those, remember?
I do. People lost money overnight because everything disappeared.
Exactly. See, so we had like probably 5,000 or something on our account. So when it happened, we decided, well, we need to take the money, whatever may happen to them, what more can happen, who knows? So we went to the bank, and the money we got from what remained from those $5,000, we stopped at a grocery store, and for all the money, all that we could buy was a smoked salmon fish. Smoked salmon, a whole fish.
You bought fish for all the money?
That's how much money left from 5,000 rubles.
Oh my gosh.
Can you imagine? Just to get a fish.
Yeah.
That's how it was.
So when you made that decision to relocate to the United States, how was it in the beginning? Did you speak the language, or you had to learn the language? Was it difficult to integrate here into the society?
No, I was not a beginner in English, because I am an English language teacher by education. But nevertheless, my daughter and I, after we came to the United States, like in 3 weeks, we joined community college, and we took English. We took conversational English. We wanted to, to renew, to improve our English, because, first of all, American English is a little different from British English. We studied British English in the Soviet Union. But of course, it was much, much, much easier for us than for people who had no command of English at all. So we never went to any other courses except community college, and then I took some specialty classes in the community college, and I have a certificate in child development. My plans were originally to start a business, like a preschool. But things changed, plans changed. You know, when you come to a new place, not even a new country, a lot of things. Sometimes your dreams do not come true. Your dreams, your plans, something changes. And, I think we went with the wind. Whatever was acceptable at that time, we went with that. And, my daughter is, she at the community college, she graduated from Loyola University. And then from dental school, she's a dentist now.
Wonderful.
And as you know, I teach ASL right now.
I do.
And now I'm here to do this. Yeah. So I'm happy to help other people, newcomers to this country.
Yeah, that's what you said when we talked. You said that you are really driven with this passion to help other people, to put them on the path of success. And sometimes when I pass by your class, I see how much passion you put into whatever you tell your class at that time. And I see that special facial expression. And I always say, she really means it. She really does. I see it in you.
Yeah, I love what I do. Thank you, Anna. I love what I do. And I really try to inspire my students because I know how not easy it is for them. The immigration, the new country, the no language status at this point. And I'm trying to do my best and to inspire them, to tell them that eventually they will speak fluently this language. And I always tell them that I'm proud that I can speak English because it's the most important language in the whole world. And the whole world speaks English.
I kind of have doubts about this. Now we're in between Spanish and Chinese. Don't you think?
I am in love with English since I was a schoolgirl, you know. So after I finished school, there was no other thing. I didn't think about anything else except of getting to college to study English.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I wish my students get their place in life and they're satisfied and happy. And they never are sorry that they left their country, their native country.
Saying that it's a big step to immigrate to any country, and especially the United States, because mentality is different and everything is different. Everything works here differently. I personally had a hard time with the governmental system, because when we come here, we have to take care of the paperwork, and how it works in Russia is, okay, you have the instructions, but you have to read in between the lines. Here in the United States, you have the instructions and you actually have to follow the instructions. I don't know about you, but I really had a hard time with this. And I wasn't really in trouble, but I had to redo a couple of documents because of that, because I was trying to read in between the lines, because that's what I was used to. But was it any difficult for you when you came here?
How do I put it? You know, my friend that came a few years before us, my friend of many years, she kind of took care of us as far as explaining things, as far as helping us to get an apartment, as far as many things. And we always appreciate this because we were new, just like you, to the whole system. We did not know how to behave in places, what to do in different places. So basically, since they went through this a few years ago, before we came, she remembered what was important for us, and that was the help we got.
You know,
it was not so scary. Of course, it was difficult to find a job, and that took a lot of time. But then, I think our daughter was the first one who started working. We had no car. We had, no transportation except buses, public transportation, and the underground. So we went to college. So we had these people who studied with us. So they were driving So they would give us a ride, and then we took the underground. So this is how it was. And in the spring, it was spring and summer, it was easier. Of course, winter was, the first winter was terrible. It was so much snow then, and we had no car, and we had to walk, you know. But then in the spring, well, my sister and I, we started looking for a job, like cleaning houses. And well, that was a job.
Yeah, you know, many people start like this. Nothing's wrong with that.
Right, that's what we did. We found out that some lady, she has a private preschool in her home. So she had like, I don't remember, I think more than eight were not allowed to have. So first my sister, I was busy with something else. My sister worked there. Then I think she found a job I don't remember what happened then, but then I was working after my sister. And then when I was already in college and doing this child development that I studied, I found a job in a preschool, another preschool, which is a, you know, normal size preschool, all ages, different ages of kids. So I worked there close to a year, and then I found another job. And then in a few years, I joined the ESL program.
This is nice, very nice. And you've been doing it for a while, for how many years?
A lot. I don't even remember. A lot, I would say. Over 15 for sure.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. And it looks like from what you're saying, or what you said before, you said that you are in love with English, and that's what you wanted to do. And you are doing this right now. Is this your American dream?
Well, you know, I never thought that this is my dream, but this is my American dream. I would say that I started working on this dream back in Ukraine, but I'm happy that I can keep it and keep working in the same field, and I enjoy doing it. And so if it is a came true dream, maybe this is what it is.
Yeah, and that tells you when you're saying that you started to work on this dream in Ukraine so many years ago, and now here we are talking about this in the United States after so many years later.
Exactly. And you know what? On top of that, I'm enjoying the language and teaching. I also enjoy this communication with my students. You know, I'm happy that in so many years, I got recently a call from a student, and she said, "Maya, do you remember me?" And she said her name. And I said, "You know, if I see you, I'm sure I would remember, but since I don't see your face, I'm not sure if I remember you." "Well, you were my teacher 100 years ago," she said. Could you help me now with my son? He needs your help."
She kept your number.
She kept my number since I believe she was a student when I used to work in a different, well, the same district, but different location. Buffalo Grove High School.
People don't forget. People remember open heart people, and people remember kindness. And I think that's what attracts people. That's why she reached out.
Probably. And then I met, it was interesting. Last year we were invited to a big party. And at the party, my husband and I were at the party. I met three of my former students.
That's a lot. Three of them.
And each of them would come up and say, do you remember me? I was a student at Wheeling High School, at Buffalo High School. It was really, really nice. You know, I
so
was
it makes
touched.
You feel good, right?
I'm sorry?
It makes you feel good.
And it touched me so greatly. You know, I was, you know, I was tearing, really. I remember this lady from Uzbekistan. She was at a low level, but somehow she got to the, I was teaching advanced then, and somehow she came to my class and she was worried. And well, she gave me as a gift. We had a New Year's party. She gave me a gift, like, you know, this little hat, the Uzbek hat,
right?
Embroidered. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
It's great.
Yeah, beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I think I know who you are. She changed a lot. You know, she became a beautiful woman since when I met her first, when she was my student. So I said, oh, it's you, Aluba. I remember you. You gave me this hat. She said, do you keep it? I said, yes, I do. I keep it.
Yeah, yeah, this is something that you keep forever.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's good memories. It's like a picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
She gave it to me, and it's, of course, the memory.
So, Maya, yeah? When you think back, when you came to this country, and when you think about Maya or newcomers coming to this country today, what advice would you give to Maya back then or this newcomers who come to this country?
Well, I don't know what exactly you would like to hear.
Just whatever you feel.
I just know that this process of coming to a new place, just a new city, let's say, new place, new home, it requires some, a lot of steps so that you get adjusted to the new place. But talking about immigration, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. So a big effort, lots of effort to establish yourself in this country. Hardworking, not only at the job, but much, much, much more that involves, of course, the language, improving, not being afraid of difficulties, not being afraid of low-paid jobs at first, whatever this job is, as long as you're paid money, you make money for a living, and you improve your English, of course, your future would look much brighter than at the beginning.
I like what you said.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Because I find that people coming here, they sometimes...
They
have misconception.
Right.
And they get frustrated because of that and discouraged as a result.
Well, people build their future by themselves. Nobody can give to you anything. You know, I should say that just the right to be, to live in this country is already the greatest gift of this country. It gives you the possibility to stay, to live, to build your life, your future here. It's already a huge gift that we need to appreciate.
Yeah, sometimes we take things for granted, and some people who forget where and how they started, and they become totally different people, especially if they don't like immigrants. Unfortunately, I see that a lot as well.
Yes, I know. I have a lady that I know Well, of course, her grandparents came here from Poland, from Romania, I think. And they were immigrants originally. But she, the granddaughter of her parents, she doesn't like immigrants. And many times I tried to explain to her that America is a country of immigrants.
Exactly. Exactly. If there is no immigration, there is no country, right?
Absolutely. Who built this country? Immigrants.
Well, the way I look at this is the lack of knowledge, is the lack of education, and be very narrow-minded, not willing to be exposed to different cultures.
Even my grandchildren, you know, I want them to know more about our immigration, about other people's immigration. And I do not want them to take for granted everything that they have now. You know, I try to work on it to let them know that it's not so easy and you cannot get everything just because you want it. You have to, you know, to work hard to get it, whatever they do, at school, at home. It's not so easy just because you want, your parents need to get it for you. You need to put some effort in it.
Exactly, exactly. And I'm glad that you're putting this mindset into the future generation, even within your family.
And yeah, I don't want them to be, you know, spoiled. I don't want them to be spoiled because their grandparents, their parents, they went through a lot to get the place where they are now. They worked really hard. It was not so easy to go through the education, working and studying at the same time, sleepless nights studying or trying to work and make some couple of dollars because you needed to pay for the rent department. Well, it's a lot, you know, and we are not the only ones. We're just one family out of millions. So, but I just want our children, because probably that education I got in my first country, my native country, it gave me some good, I would say, some good mentality, probably. I think I'm right when I'm saying this. I don't want my kids to be spoiled. I want them to see the reality. Nothing falls out of the blues. You know, nothing. You have to work hard to get everything you have. At school, like I said, well, they are doing not bad so far in school. I would say good, sports, but I still have some things that I would like to teach them.
And that's good. That's why we have grandparents, right?
I think so, yeah. I don't want to spoil them. I just want them to be good people, you know.
Absolutely. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm glad that you shared your story. Thank you very much for doing this, Maya. I know that it's a big step for you. I know it was a big decision, and I'm glad that this is happening. Thank you very much for doing this, Maya.
My pleasure. See you soon.
See you soon, and I hope you have a good night.
You too.